Welcome to Close Up Radio, where our hosts, Doug Llewellyn and Jim Masters, bring you the amazing stories of people who answered the call to unlock their potential and taken control of their own success with authenticity, creativity, persistence, and resilience. Close Up Radio special guests share their knowledge and wisdom so you, the listener, can live the most empowered life possible. Close Up Radio. And now, here's today's host, Jim Masters.
Thank you very much for joining everybody. It's a pleasure to have you with us here on the program. We really appreciate it when you're tuning in and enjoying all these amazing conversations that we have with the extraordinary guests that we seek out and find who are doing incredible things to make our world a better place. And again, we thank you for making us a part of your day. It's always a pleasure and a privilege to have you with us here. We are very excited to have a conversation right now this afternoon with Professor Karen Barney, founder of the Transformative Justice Initiative. It's extraordinary work that she does, fascinating. You know, at an early age, Karen learned about a profession that helps people with disabilities, whether physical or mental, in nature, to learn, grow, improve, function, and achieve true quality of life. This is why she pursued a career in occupational therapy. And while working on her dissertation, she had a personal experience that led her to focus her efforts on incarcerated persons. Today, Karen J. Barney is a professor emeritus at St. Louis University, where she launched the Transformative Justice Program, the multi-pronged effort and educational program. The initiative is aimed at helping individuals who are currently incarcerated to learn professional life skills that can help them transition more effectively into mainstream society. The program is a grant-funded initiative, and by appearing here on Close Up Radio Live, she hopes to raise awareness of the program and the opportunities to support it. Karen and her team collaborate with city, state, and federal crime justice initiatives and work strategically toward organizational and social change. These groups also utilize evidence-based transformative services and engage community, university, and systems in the transformative justice model. The program was envisioned in 2010 and established in 2014. It's an interdisciplinary effort with the university. Karen herself is affiliated with the SLU Department of Occupational Science and Occupational Therapy with the College of Health Sciences. As a professor, she's also involved in teaching and publishing endeavors that bring notoriety to the university. My pleasure to welcome Karen from St. Louis, Missouri, USA, right here on Close Up Radio Live. Karen, welcome back to the program. It's a pleasure to have you with us today.
Thank you very much. I really appreciate having this opportunity to connect with your audiences.
Well, we have this wonderful time together, and I'm so much looking forward to it, and the pleasure is all ours, Karen. You're involved, as I mentioned, which I think is really incredible, in this notable effort, the Transformative Justice Program. Tell us what that is and what inspired you to develop and create it.
Well, quite honestly, I'm sorry, my voice has been fine.
I know, it gets you all choked up just thinking about it, right?
In my profession, I have specialized in what I prefer to call aging adults. I am one myself. But when my son committed this crime that in which he took a life, I thought, oh my gosh. First of all, my feeling was for the victim. And then at the time I was working on my dissertation as a non-traditional student, I was actually older than some of my professors. But I thought, I have to do something. And then I learned our university was having they were developing an education program at the prison that was an hour south of St. Louis, where I live. And so I went to the director and I asked him if we could be involved. And he actually understood what my profession does, which is kind of unusual because it's not been in the headlines much. So I developed this model, which is a seamless support before and after incarceration. And when you think about it, when anybody, a listener perhaps, has had a procedure like a hip or knee replacement, you would never be discharged from the hospital without both pre and what I call post discharge assistance, information, other kinds of support. And so the way I envisioned this was that we should be doing the same with our prisons, who are a stark contrast. There are some training programs and college classes offered, but there is a huge disconnect from the reality of everyday lives.
That is so very true on so many different levels. It is something that, you know, having it made known as part of one of it all. You have a long and distinguished career in both OT and education. Tell us about that. Maybe you can share some highlights of your work and publication while at the university.
Sure. First, I taught at the associate degree level in Madison, Wisconsin, and lectured at the university, which is my alma mater. Then my husband's work took us to Kentucky, where I taught at Eastern Kentucky University. And then, again, my husband's work took our family of six to my hometown, which is St. Louis, Missouri. And I first taught at Washington University for 8 years. And then I moved over to St. Louis University. Washington University is a wonderful place. St. Louis University includes a lot of service and scholarship. I was appointed to the Geriatric Education Center while I was at Washington University. I did many projects, taught, and then I served as department chair at St. Louis U. And as you indicated, I'm emeritus status now. So I've been doing that for 13 years. I just published the second edition of a co-edited textbook, but it's useful also for people, anyone who wants to know how occupational therapy works with aging adults. That's what it's called, OT with Aging Adults, Promoting Quality of Life Through Collaborative Practice. I have two co-editors and 82 interdisciplinary global authors. So that took 3.5 years. And so you can tell I'm I'm passionate about my field and getting the word out about how it can help in anyone, really.
That's so important. Getting the word out is, again, job number one for sure. There are three committees involved in administering this initiative for incarcerated persons. Can you share with us, perhaps, Karen, who they are and how they help bring program goals to fruition?
Yes, of course. I'll start with what I call the inside group. These are men who are serving on a St. Louis University student council, but they're in prison. They're part of the prison education program that the university provides for both the incarcerated men and the staff. The disability movement has this phrase, nothing about us without us. So we must include input from people who have what we call the lived experience. Then the second is my occupational therapy advisory group. And they provide a lot of input about a range of topics. The third is an interprofessional group. These are 20 different professions at St. Louis University, all different, including medicine, nursing, psychiatry, the School of Business, many others, social work, of course. And so these people all serve as both providing input and direct contact, as well as collaborating, of course.
And that's essential. Yeah, collaboration is the name of the game for sure. You visit your son often,
yes,
and say even a delicious meal makes a dramatic difference. Tell us what it's been like for him inside.
Yes. Thank you for asking. So, first of all, we have the... Anyway, it's the prisons are an oppressive environment. Every time we go for a visit, it's very evident. You know, even visitors, of course, we have to be screened and so on, but it's very, very regimented. Our son is quite intelligent. We adopted him at age 4 and a half, and he had a very challenged life before then. We didn't know it at the time of his adoption, but he's very bright. He got his GED at age 16 while he was in a facility working on different behaviors, because we had to have a lot of services for him. While he's been in prison, he's read everything in the prison library. He's just this past summer been allowed to take university classes, and he aces them. But the jobs he's given in the prison are mopping floors in a variety of spaces, and he's also served as an aide to older prisoners who can't do as much for themselves. But prisoners are counted 4 times a day. They have a poor diet. So every time we go for a food visit, we let him set the menu. And so he can have whatever he would like and good food. And then they also have very limited medical services. And this is throughout the country. It's a challenge.
I can see that. Yeah. Thanks for sharing that too. I know it's not always easy. There's a quote from Buddha. one moment can change a day, one day can change a life, one life can change the world. So while learning about you, that came to mind. Can you share maybe statistics on the lives that have been changed while in and out of prison through your efforts, Karen?
Sure. So now our program is grant funded. These are not federal grants. These are private organizations like the Lutheran Foundation and RASCOB Foundation. RASCOB has been our longest funding agency, but this means that we can only reach a few people. And I would really earnestly love to see this kind of model incorporated throughout the country, because what we find in what we specialize in, my profession, is that they achieve their goals in terms of employment upon release. Their community participation is improved. Their communication management is also, their ability to establish a home, you know, that's usually an apartment first, community mobility. So they may have to use mass transportation. Very few will have an automobile available to them, you know, maybe a relative or something like that, but most will have to use mass transportation. Their health management and their symptom management is also very, very important. You know, some people who are incarcerated have a history of drug use, or they have conditions that really need following. So all of those are really important to try to make sure they have the kind of services, first of all, that are relevant to their needs, and that they're actually utilizing those. And then education is another one. We find that in all the clients we've served, 100% who consistently attended our what we call occupational therapy sessions, which are usually they're usually virtual, because let me move back a step here. We meet with them face-to-face for the first session, but the prisons that we deal with are all over the state. And perhaps you're aware that in 2014, the U.S. Supreme Court overturned the requirement that juveniles who were sentenced to life without the option of parole had to do a life sentence. So when they overturned that, we had quite a few people in our state who would be eligible if they served likely two more years, at least 30 years, to return to society. And so we worked with another agency to do some training of attorneys who would then refer their clients to us so that we could work with them and include all these other disciplines too, wherever needed. So of these clients, 100% who consistently attended the occupational therapy sessions, obtained or maintained employment during their time in the program, all maintain some form of stable housing also throughout their time in the program. Every client who set what we call occupation-based goals increase their performance and satisfaction in at least one. And the greatest increase in performance and satisfaction was noted in the following: obtaining employment, looking for employment, work skills, financial management, physical and mental health management, medication management, independent housing, formal education, caregiving, obtaining a license, technology and transportation, education, and leisure activities. And we've had 95% of our clients have maintained their community independence by staying free of rearrest. Of those who began the program with stable employment, that's not quite 50%, it's 47, all maintained stable employment during our program. And of those who were not employed when entering the program, that was 42%, all obtained employment during our program. And, you know, one of our partners at the university is Transformative Work Academy. And they host sessions where employers can come and hire people who've been incarcerated, and they're focused just on them. You know, it's not a general employment opportunity, but just for people who've been incarcerated. So they have employers who are willing to work with us and with the individuals, our clients, who've been incarcerated. And we've had, with these small numbers, we've had really, really good success. I would love to see this expanded throughout the country because we know it works. We have the data that shows that it does on a at least our state scale that we have. But we're limited by funding, and there's a public attitude that, you know, not in my backyard. People don't want people returning from prison, and, you know, they don't care to interact with them, but they would be amazed at how motivated these people are to be highly functional and to be a member of society again.
So very important, beautifully said as well. You hit all those key points for sure. What would be some other message you would like to share with our audience listening right now? And if people want to learn more about the initiative and the work that you're doing, what's the best way they can do that, Karen?
So, as I've mentioned, our program is grant-funded. The private foundations have supported us for the past 14 years, and every year when we apply, of course, we have to provide data, you know, evidence that this is working. So as I mentioned earlier, we would love to expand this this effort and see it utilized throughout the U.S. I actually do virtual presentations, and I've presented to about 8 different groups across the country. And what I do is I include a lot of comparisons with other countries and other developed countries, that is, who do incarceration very differently from the way we do. And we have, the largest rate of incarceration of any nation in the world. And there are a lot of thoughts about what has caused this. And all kinds of things. Racism is one of them. But anyway, I would love to see this expanded. And we could do more, of course, if we had more funding. But we're sort of limited. Because unless you have large numbers, the federal grants are not accessible. With 100 people, that's not considered a large number to get a federal grant unless there is something that I haven't seen recently.
Is there any chance of that grant being changed now that the political environment is changing?
Well, we could hope. We could certainly hope. One concern, I'm always hopeful. I'm one of those eternal optimists. But
we need more of those.
Yeah.
In the same way.
Well, I'm not a radical person. I'm just a caring person, a therapist. Okay.
Right. Exactly.
But in the 70s and 80s, we were hearing that the prisons are the largest industrialized complex in our nation, and they're a real money-making operation. Every time our son and his fellow inmates go to the canteen, they have to spend their money. It's not just given to them. Of course, they have to spend their money. We support our son. We've been supporting him ever since he was incarcerated. He's now been in for 28 years. Mm-hmm. You add that up. Every month, a sizable check goes just to support the canteen needs. That's a lot of money. And so then they charge for the use of, finally, they've got tablets that they're able to use. At least in this state, it's only been recently. The Bard College Initiative in New York is much older than our program. But anyway, I don't know what they do. But anyway,
if people want to learn more, what's the best way? Is there a website or point of contact?
Yes, the website would be best. And I think I was told that you would be able to share that.
slu.edu/mission-identity-initiatives. So it's a long one. slu.edu/mission-identity www.initiatives/transformative-justice. Darren, thanks for joining us on the show. That was a very quick half hour, but a very authentic and real and impactful one, and certainly hope you enjoyed the time with me as much as I absolutely have with you today.
Well, I thank you for your generous offering of time. Thank you so much.
The pleasure is all ours, and we hope to expand further and maybe hear even more examples of the work in action. And it was really a pleasure chatting with you here on the show. Karen Barney of the Transformative Justice Program joining us here. I'm your host, Jim Masters, thanking you for your time. This time till next time, stay tuned. We'll be back with more great shows coming up right here on Close Up Radio Live. Till then, for all of us, do have a great day. Thanks for listening, and bye for now.
You have been listening to a broadcast from Close Up Radio, a division of Close Up Television Incorporated. For more information about our show and to be considered for future broadcasts, please visit closeuptelevision.com. You may also learn about us on social media and listen to us on podcast and internet radio. Thank you for joining us, and we hope that you have an empowered and productive day.